Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Crime Wire Radio. Denny Griffin here, and for the next half hour, I'll be your host for a special presentation. We're going to be talking about the Smurfs. And my guest tonight is Renee Winters. Renee was penned a book recently called Smurfs, The Inside Story of the Little Blue Characters. And if you were a kid growing up in the 80s here in this country, you may have spent some time in front of the tube on Saturday mornings watching the Smurfs. If you were an adult, you might have enjoyed having the Smurfs on, so the kids were occupied while you took care of some household chores or went to wash the car or mowed the lawn or whatever. I happened to get involved with the Smurfs because I was an adult, but my wife made Smurf dolls. And for several months, I always had a trunk load of Smurfs I was delivering. But there apparently was another side aspect to the Smurfs that I was not aware of, and I don't think many people here were aware of. And tonight, I'd like to welcome Renee to tell us a little bit about the Smurfs and about her book. And before we begin, I just want to say I don't have time to read Renee's entire resume. It's quite extensive and quite impressive, so I'm going to limit it to a couple of areas that basically will impact about what we're going to discuss tonight. Renee graduated from the University of Granada in Spain, BA in Business Administration. She graduated on the Dean's List cum laude. She worked as Executive Vice President, Development, Production, and Merchandising for SEP Inter Incorporated. There was a busy international organization representing network and syndicated television series, TV, movies, theatrical productions, merchandising, and licensing of clothing, toys, books, etc. And she was involved with contracts, publicity, promotion, and deal negotiations. Renee, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. That was a very nice intro, Denny. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I want to have you add a little bit, if you would, to your intro, anything I may have left out before we get into your book and the subject of the Smurfs.
Well, I had been working in the entertainment industry for quite a while before I went to work for SEP Enter, which was the U.S. operations of the company that produced the Smurfs in the United States. Previous to working with them, I had been on My Little Corner of the World, which was a show that won Freedoms Foundation Awards and American Family Heritage Awards. I had also worked with Robert Stack on How to Change Your Life, winner of an Angel Award. And I had worked with Peter Marshall writing One More Time, which was an extremely successful television show. So I really basically had some background in the industry and certainly in children's programming and shows that, were family-oriented. That's how I happened to be hired for the job with SEP Enter. Although animation was not the area that I had specifically worked in, I did have family background programming. What else would you like to know before we start about the book?
I heard a story, you can confirm whether or not it's true, that at one point you were doing a movie or maybe in a couple of different movies where you had dangerous animals in the vicinity and you actually didn't have a stunt person or something. You had to confront these, one of them I believe was a reptile, a rattlesnake.
That is correct. I worked on a movie called Treasure Tiopa. And that was starring Gilbert Roland. And in that particular movie, I was a young actress, and I worked with a rattlesnake, a live rattlesnake, in the middle of nowhere. I was young and crazy and wanted to be in the industry and willing to do almost anything. In retrospect, it was probably pretty dangerous.
Okay, Renee, before I just want to give out our phone number anytime during the show. If anyone has a question or comment, you can call in to speak with Renee or ask her a question at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. What I'd like to do, Renee, to kind of set the tone is read a couple of paragraphs from your book. I'm starting on page 10.
Quote, all right.
The Smurfs in the 1980s were designed for two specific purposes. First was to make the greatest financial returns possible from worldwide distribution of the shows as well as the merchandising. The second was something that was never admitted openly. One thing that for a long time both the critics and the American workers failed to detect. The shows cloaked a subliminal communal communist philosophy. The word Smurf was used in some form as many as 50 times plus in individual 22 minutes of a half-hour show that aired on Saturday mornings. It was no wonder that children were chanting the name repeatedly. Looking back, I'm surprised they were allowed to get away with it and that we failed to understand the greater scheme of what was going on. The idea that this mania may be coming back bigger than ever is too much to endure. It's time to look at the very dark side of the Smurfs, both in Europe and the USA, through the eyes of one who was there, and that is you. So, the Smurfs, I guess, are making a comeback, aren't they? You're getting regenerated?
Well, there is currently a feature motion picture being produced by Columbia that is out and now playing in various cities across the United States. I will say that none of the same people that I worked with in the animated television series are involved in this particular movie. However, the theme hasn't really changed that much. They're still showing the Smurfs in a commune environment. They're still showing the protagonist, Gargamel, who was the dark Jewish character as the protagonist. So they really haven't changed it that much. They have just covered it in a much softer and easier style where it's not quite as obvious as it was in the half-hour animated television shows of the 80s.
You know, the Smurfs actually got their start, what was it, 1958 over in Europe?
That's correct. They started in Europe in newspaper print in France and then later went on into black and white animation in Europe, but never really became the big hit until it came to the U.S.
Okay, and I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong, but even before the TV and so forth here in the U.S., the Smurfs, they started merchandising Smurfs in the 70s here. Am I correct on that?
That is correct. They did start merchandising, but it was at a smaller level than once it came to the U.S. Once they became such a major hit in the U.S., then it really began to spread worldwide, and we began mass merchandising everything from dolls, pins, lunchboxes, glassware, T-shirts, almost anything you could think of.
Okay, and then it really took hold, and, of course, the Saturday morning cartoons
exactly.
And what I think 1981 started here. Now, you are obviously concerned or that we didn't, when I say we, I mean the American people didn't catch on during the 80s and that we may fall into that same boat again now with the new wave of Smurfs. Could you tell us, Renee, about once you got the job at Enter, what happened and what did you start to see that convinced you there was more to this than just innocent kiddie entertainment?
Well, I have to admit that in the beginning, I was so tremendously busy involved with the production, overseeing. The scripts were coming from Europe, and they were being translated into English and then taken to Hanna-Barbera for the creation of the animation. I was involved with overseeing that. I was involved with the mass merchandising of all the items that were going out. I was traveling back and forth to Belgium 1 week every month. And, you know, I was really, really busy. So I didn't stop to study each of the half hours that was actually being produced and delivered to the network. It wasn't until someone made a comment to me one day about the fact that they thought that it had some communist overtones that I started to look at these various half hours. And as I looked at them, I could see the thread of what was happening. The creator, Peo, Pierre Culliford, better known as Peo, had communist background in his background, and he was the one who was delivering the scripts and giving them to the U.S., and they were being translated exactly as we were getting them. And there was a lot in there that probably should never have gone out. But the network didn't seem to object. They didn't seem to catch it. The American public didn't object, and it was such a big hit that nobody wanted to rock the boat and change it, although there was a little undercurrent about what was going on and what was happening. As time went by and I looked at it more and more, I began to realize that there was a very strong communist socialist influence happening with these stories. And when you really looked at it, you could see it. But most people were not looking at them that seriously. They were looking at them as just a fun, light cartoon and placed the kids in front of them and kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, and that was my issue. I was, when I started, I was talking about the trunk full of Smurfs. So that was my, basically, the extent. And to me, I developed the attitude because I get tired of lugging them around. It had nothing to do with any subliminal messages, but I developed an attitude toward the Smurfs. I had had enough of them after a while. But I know the kids loved them. And do you think back then and probably today that a lot of us parents, maybe grandparents, if we find something on the tube that the kids really go for and we think it's keeping them out of mischief, it keeps them occupied, and if it's not our bag, if it's not the type of thing that we're going to sit down and watch with them, that kind of thing could still be going on, couldn't it, with other products and other things?
Oh, absolutely, and I did see it with other animated series, and, of course, I've seen it with other television shows, and we see it very clearly with rock music and rap music. The kids love it. There's a subliminal message. Most parents aren't getting it. They don't see it. They don't take the time to pay attention. And, of course, that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book. I was very concerned that with the movie coming back that they would start to mass merchandise and do the whole thing all over again. And I really want parents and grandparents to be alert to the fact that watch what your children are watching. You know, their minds absorb a great deal, and we really need to pay attention to what they're seeing and hearing.
Yeah, really this, you know, out of sight, out of mind thing, you know, you put them in front of the TV and you go on about your business and forget about it, is not, it's not doing a service to the kids or really, you know, if we as the adults aren't careful and supervising properly and paying attention to what's going on, and that goes for everything. Look at the kids getting on computers and all of a sudden they're into porn, and I mean, there's,
exactly.
You know.
And dating, also dating a lot things. Of violence.
Yeah, and then when things happen, we kind of, as a society, throw our hands up in the air and said, oh, my God, how did this happen? Well, you know, maybe in some cases we aren't as diligent as we should be as to what the kids are learning or being taught. And that there's horror stories even on the TV. They're horror stories to me on the TV periodically about some of the curriculum and stuff in some of the schools with second and third graders, you know,
exactly.
Getting graphic sex education. I mean, I'm thinking, my goodness, it's a little worrisome to me. But
especially
back to the Smurfs, if we could, what did you notice? You said you began to notice after a while, after you kind of got your feet planted firmly on the ground and had a little more time, that there were threads in certain things. Was there anything specific that you said, this is the communist overture?
Yeah, a lot of the things that I noticed. Number one, the communal living, the assignment of specific jobs to specific Smurfs, and they never changed during their life. They never had an opportunity to be or do anything else. I found that very interesting with some communist-type thought process behind it. Also, the main leader, Papa Smurf, wore a red hat. The rest of the Smurfs were all dressed in white. This is kind of similar to the Ku Klux Klan and the head of the Ku Klux Klan being in red and the rest of them being in white. There were several things that just really began to bother me. And one issue was there's only one woman among all the Smurfs, which I found very interesting. And she was blonde and blue-eyed, but there was only one among this whole community, and none other were ever allowed into it. So I don't know what the thinking was behind that, but I found that kind of interesting.
Now, did other people... Were other people you worked with getting these vibes too? I mean, was there any, you know, water cooler talk where people were expressing these concerns?
I don't think it was in the work situation. At least that's not where I was hearing it from. In the work environment, they were very busy. They were making a great deal of money. The series was extremely successful, as well as winning awards. And, you know, nobody was paying much attention. They all thought, well, hey, we're doing this right. It's great. It's you know, it's going to go on for a long time. Where I began to hear it was outside from a couple of people. One was a woman lawyer who one day made a comment to me at lunch, and she said, have you really looked at these? And I said, you know, in truth, I haven't. I've been so busy, I haven't really ever stopped to study the individual scripts or to see the total finished product. Usually on Saturday morning, I was watching the competition. I wasn't watching our show because part of my job was based on what the competition was doing.
Now, tell us a little bit, too, about the structure and the people at the company. Their backgrounds and where they were. Now, obviously, there was a lot of money involved here. This
yes.
thing was a fad or a craze or whatever you want to call it, a mania at that time. So a lot of people were making a lot of money. And I think you mentioned earlier that nobody wants to rock the boat. I mean,
exactly. They were making money. It was successful. It was winning awards. The public loved it. You know, what could be wrong, right?
Yeah, it's almost too good to be true, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So the people that were actually in charge now, you said this was the U.S. Division or U.S. operation. But how about the company overall? What types of people are or were involved in running this corporation?
As I found out on my trips to Belgium and meeting the different heads of the corporation in Belgium where it was centered, the background of the president and one of the top executives there was very difficult. They had come out, the one executive had come out of Romania. He had been involved in child brainwashing in Romania. The other executive had come from Germany. He spent a lot of time in Poland. I believe he was involved with communist people in Poland. As Poland was falling, he was getting money out of Poland, and the United States was donating money to Poland. It was quite an interesting time. Among the top three people in the Belgian office, eventually a lot of dissension occurred, and one of them fled to Brazil with a great deal of money, which started probably the downfall of the entire operation, including the U.S. operation.
Now, you said one of them was had been involved with some child brainwashing, possibly. Was that one fellow who was involved was a Mr. Victor?
That's correct. He was involved in Romania with brainwashing of children. He had been a high-ranking military person and actually had wanted to get out of Romania but couldn't until he was finally able to get his wife and three children out. Then at that point, he was able to flee, and he became a political refugee in the United States. They took him in because of the knowledge of what he had of what was going on in Romania. And how he became involved with the head gentleman in Brussels, I'm not quite sure, but I think there was a long-standing relationship there between them. They seemed to be extremely friendly, seemed to have known each other for a great many years, so there was some connection that wasn't evident, at least to me.
Well, now, I don't know if this is possible. It doesn't sound like it is, but I want to run it by you. Could it be that the executives, the other executives in this corporation, could have not known what was going on? It seems to me that they should have.
Do you see that
they've been innocent or ignorant?
I'm not sure. I certainly think that the top three executives did know. The lower mid-level management and the employees, I'm not sure. They may have been caught pretty much in the same scenario that we were in the United States, in that it was such a big hit and was so successful, nobody really looked at it too close, you know? They just kept on doing what they were doing and said it was working.
Yeah, and that, like you say, when you have that kind of money and fame and fortune involved, it's a little tougher to get anybody to want to, you know, pry back the lid and take a real look, because
exactly. Nobody wanted to at that point rock the boat. They didn't want to, you know, affect their own jobs, and possibly I was even included in that. And it wasn't until a great many years later, when they came out now with the movie and I saw the announcements that it was coming, that I sat down to write the book, because I had the fear that they would try the same thing over again.
Now, from what's gone on recently with this now, with the movie and so forth, do you think this is going to catch on as it did back in the 80s? Is there any remote possibility this could do it again?
I don't think so. After seeing the movie, it has not had a real successful run in the city where I am, in Las Vegas, and what I read in the trade papers, it hasn't done real well in L.A. or New York. I think our kids today are smarter. They're more sophisticated. They're more into technology, and I don't think that the whole premise of the Smurfs can work today like it did back in the 80s.
Well, so that's probably a good thing, right? I mean, I don't wish anybody bad luck. If the producers of the movie are not doing well, I'm not gloating over that. But the idea, after reading your book, you know, the idea that we might have a round two of this, and I got a little nervous about that, because I would hate to think, you know, that could happen a second time, at least happen without us being alert to it and kind of checking real close as to what is going on.
Exactly. I don't think that it will have the success this time around for the reasons that I've said, and mostly because I believe that our young children are smarter today than they were back in the 80s, and their interests are changing, and I just don't think so. On the other hand, you know, a new product could be developed that basically does the same thing, that has subliminal advertising, that has a subliminal theme going through it. I mean, that certainly is possible and something that parents should look for.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you were mentioning, excuse me, a little bit earlier, that, you know, everybody shared and they had the same job for life and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
It was nobody was above the rest, except Papa. But it's... You know, I'm just thinking anybody could come up with some kind of a series or concept, whatever the name is. It wouldn't be Smurfs necessarily, but something to show a utopia of some kind where everybody's kind of happy and gets along.
Exactly.
And blah, blah, blah. Nobody's poor, you know, and everybody's equal and all that kind of thing. And why wouldn't it take off again? I mean, I think... Yeah, the kids are more sophisticated, certainly that's true. But if you come in with a fresh idea of something that's geared toward the kids of today, as they think and so forth, I don't see why that wouldn't work again.
It could. It could work again, and that is a fear, of course. One of the other things... you know, I thought it was very anti-Jewish when I really looked at it. Gargamel was always portrayed as the capitalist. He was the evil antagonist who always wanted to make money. He was always in search of getting a Smurf and turning it into gold. And even in the movie, they portray him that way.
Well, I wonder if anybody in the Jewish community picked up on that, because they're usually pretty sensitive.
I don't know, but I think that it's something that they should look at, you know. I felt that it was definitely, in the television series, it was definitely slanted that way, without a doubt.
Now, we were just talking that this type of thing, even if the Smurfs, the current round of Smurfs doesn't do it, but it could happen again with some different family, you know, different cartoon family or whatever. How do we, as Americans, protect ourselves from that, or protect the children from that, if you will? What can we do? I mean, when you got something that's that popular, if you get some show or some idea or some concept that takes off the way the Smurfs did, it's like a runaway train. I mean, how do you corral it and control it?
I think parents have to be more aware of what their children are watching, what they're reading, what they're seeing. I think they have to be more involved in their young lives, especially in the young ages. I mean, up till at least they're, I would say, 14 or 15, by that point they've pretty much formed their basic foundation. But the young children, parents have to be involved, because subliminal advertising is happening every day in every children's programming. The commercial sponsors, you know, tend to use some subliminal advertising a lot of times throughout the show. Little things, you'll see a product shown, you'll see somebody using a specific item that, you know, is for sale. So there's all kinds of ways that they're doing it. It's just, what is too much, you know, and that is up to the parent to determine what they feel is too much for their child to absorb.
Yeah, and if you can't get the parents involved, concerned about this issue, then it can happen. I mean, if we all aren't alert, the parents, the kids to some degree, but I think you're 100% right, Renee. If the parents, as the supervisors, if you will, of the children, the teachers, the mentors of the children, if they're not alert, if we, or as parents and grandparents, aren't alert as to what's going on, and you know, I've seen out shopping, and I've seen kids, I think in some cases they're with grandparents, unless the parents had children very late in life, but uh-huh. And the grandparents take the kids out for a day, and they go to a mall or go to these different stores, and the kids virtually call the shots. I mean, you can have a, you know, 6-7 year old child, and you know, I want this, I want that, and the grandparents, without hesitation or question, grab the item and take it to the cash register. And
exactly.
You know, and that's to me, I know they love their grandkids, I understand that, and it, you know, it's a great thing they want to do for them, and if they can, that's great. But I think you had to use a little judgment also, and if you want to buy them something, buy them the right things, or you at least know what you're putting in their hands.
Exactly, and also, with children, it isn't always what you buy them. It's the quality time that you spend with them and the things that you do. And I think that should be number one and the most important thing. I think today in society we're seeing a great deal of violence, and a lot of it has come from parents being very lax. I think it has also come from programming. A lot of the programming that they have seen has been very violent. And I think kids grow up with that idea, and so therefore they start doing it in their own lives, and they don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Renee, I hate to say this, but the time is already just about gone. We're down to our last 30 seconds or so. Please tell us real quick where people can get your book.
Absolutely. Amazon.com. It is on Amazon, and it's under the name of the book, Smurfs, The Inside Story of the Little Blue Characters, or you could also bring it up under my name, Renee Winters, and please do so. It's available on Amazon.com.
Renee, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I really enjoyed it.
Denny, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it too, and I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity to comment.
Okay, and we'll do it again. And I'll see you in a couple of months.
Thanks. Look forward to it.
Thanks, Renee.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And before we sign off, I just wanted to, talking about authors, mention another author friend of mine, Morgan St. James. And this month of August, she's had two books come out. One is the third in her comical Silver Sisters mystery series, Vanishing Act in Vegas. And it's a great read. And the other is Writer's Tricks of the Trade, 39 Things You Need to Know About the ABCs of Writing Fiction. And that was just released. Both books are available on Amazon in paperback, also in Kindle and ebook. So if you're looking for something to read, please check out Renee's book, Smurfs, and also Morgan's Vanishing Act in Vegas and Writer's Tricks of the Trade. And thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk again next time. Have a great night. Bye-bye.